And as I said before, and having McLaughlin might help us.
Yesterday, Celtic thumped Rangers. They humiliated Rangers. And on Tuesday night, next up for the Celtic treatment, are Real Madrid. We've got the band back together. We had a game yesterday, so I am joined now by Hull Boy, just trying to remember their pretend names, by Hull Boy and Eddie Pearson. How are you doing, guys?
Very good, thanks, Harry.
Good to speak to you, Harry.
So, first up, to avoid having a type of podcast that we've had before, did you watch the game yesterday?
Yes.
Eddie,
I was present at the game. I was in section 117, which is the section right next to the away support, which is actually appears to be a bit of a tourist section. I was about five or six sections along from my normal bit, due to one thing or another issue with tickets. The ticket office were really good at sorting out for me. And I was surrounded by, there was a Dutch family behind me. There was three Dutch guys to the left of me. There was two German guys in front of me. And I swear to God, at one point during the game, the Dutch family, who every time had tried to get the ball, was making noises like, turned around to his family. You could hear him quite clearly say, "This is turning into a lovely afternoon," right? And I was just like, that was a highlight. And if, you know, at first I thought, is that Steve McLaren behind me? But that's exactly how he put it.
And Andy, you're my go-to when a controversial incident happens in the game, because I know that most times, obviously being down in Hull, you're watching it on the telly. You're my go-to point of reference on WhatsApps to see whether was that a penalty or not.
Yes, it was a penalty. It's always a penalty.
Yes, I know. I'll just turn to guy sitting next to me, Big Roddy, and I'll say, apparently it was a penalty. Every time, and my mate watching the game says it was a penalty. So we will get on to the pre-game event. So Eddie, you had a mix-up, and the Celtic ticket office, despite everything that they've berated, any time I've had an issue, which has been very few and far between, they've fixed it. You got to the game after a mix-up with your IT qualities, is that right?
Just the stupidity, old age on my part. Because we sit in the family stand, we need to purchase our tickets. And I went through the process well within the deadline. I think I purchased them. And then about 4 days later, I thought, the money hasn't come out of our bank account for that. Phoned them up, and I'd obviously made some sort of muggle of it. But they were absolutely excellent. They got me four tickets together, just further round from where I am normally. So we got there without any trouble. Me, my youngest, and my two nephews took in the game. And as I say, we were right next to the away support, and that was quite entertaining. I mean, I was a wee bit concerned, because I don't know if you remember the last time we faced them. There was all sorts flying backwards and forwards at the end of the game, and we were a bit apprehensive about, well, hopefully a bit a lot quieter. But there wasn't anybody left to throw anything by the time that game was finished yesterday, so it was absolutely fine.
So starting off, Andy, happy with the team? Was it what you expected?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the thing was, I was watching with some friends, and we were saying, you know, if you win 9-0 the week before, and you've got two players who've scored hat-tricks, it's difficult to justify any changes unless there are injuries or suspensions, which of course there weren't. So, you know, I think a few people were saying, well, will it be Abada or Maeda? But for me, it was going to be Abada because of the way it performed against Dundee United.
Maeda was the only one that was really a question mark over in terms of what the team would line up as, in my opinion, because just having watched them over the last few weeks in terms of the way we press and the way we close them down, he's vital to that. But two things, Abada has consistently given Barisic are doing. He clearly loves these games. His goal scoring record is what's that? Three he's scored now in a season in one game. So that means that he's got to come into contention. Scored the hat trick last week. Looks apart for a boy of his age. You know, but this guy, if he keeps going the way he's going right to the top, because, you know, he's 20 years of age. It's unbelievable the way he's conducting himself. But then also, as the game progressed, and maybe I'm jumping the gun a wee bit here, Harry, but as the game progressed, it became clear that we weren't going to press them and push really high up. And, you know, I don't want to come across all Celtic cynic with tactical analysis stuff like that, but we did sit a bit deeper than we normally do, and we didn't really sort of shut them down the way we would do across their back line. We let them pass it about across their back line, so maybe that was a factor as well, and the fact that we didn't bother with Maeda to start the game off, you know. Maybe I'm overthinking it, and the simple reason was the guy scored 3 last week, you can't drop him, which would make sense as well.
I don't think you're overthinking it, but me personally, I thought we didn't press in those kind of first 10-15 minutes because Kyogo had gone off. I think the press would have been different if Kyogo had stayed on, and we took a little bit of time to adjust.
Did you not think though that would be perfectly valid because we went for a different option with a big guy up front because we had to? But did you not think though that we gave them time to play the ball across their back line in a way that we normally shut down much quicker? And maybe we were comfortable with them playing it across their back line because they weren't going anywhere with it. And that the other factor in terms of that was that they lined up with 3 very defensive-minded midfielders.
Yeah.
And they were obviously designed to stop us from playing. So if we just went and said, well, we're not getting concerns that you three are going to be able to do it in creative with the ball, so there's no need to put the same shutting down and demanding that you're forcing you into issues, because we'll just wait until the ball will come to us inevitably and then we'll just run by you, which is what actually happened. Sometimes I think that a lot of this stuff is over-analysis, and it's easy to say after the fact that, you know, we set out to do this and we set out to do that and it worked. But I certainly get the impression that we were more comfortable with them having the ball than perhaps even, say, the game in February, where we just dominated them and never gave them a moment. I thought that yesterday we gave them a bit more time, and you may well be right. It may well be because Kyogo had to go off that we didn't have that real high intensity in our final third, initially anyway. But I felt as if there was a plan taking place there the fact that Maeda wasn't playing was maybe a factor in that.
Mm-hmm. You could be right, and like you say, you look at these things with hindsight. I think the other thing is, which has been a kind of a theme for me this season, is that our passing is different to last season. We're passing between the opposition lines. And I think you've touched on the point there about their midfield being very defensive, but pretty static as well. So I think that made it easier for us to pass through the lines. And at that point, you actually don't need to press as much.
I think that's a big factor. Sorry, Harry, but I think that's a big factor in terms of the difference, in terms of, say, Ange's football. I think we said this last time, so sorry if I'm repeating myself. Ange's football as opposed to, say, Brendan Rodgers' football. You know, try to think about the last really enjoyable footballing team that we witnessed over the last few years, and it would probably be Brendan Rodgers' first season. Brendan Rodgers was very much about possession, and possession was more about holding the lines, and I saw somebody describe it as kind of horseshoe football. You know, it goes round, if it doesn't work it comes back, it goes round again, we circulate the ball. Whereas with guys like Hatate in the team, our passing is much more direct. We go, the ball goes forward. You know, it goes vertically up and down the pitch and horizontally across it. And that, breaking the lines like that and getting through, an example of that in particular is the second goal, where O'Reilly's ball takes out about 4 of the players. Yeah. You know, there's a German term, packing, for it, but I'm not really sure, you know, whether the packer is the player that passes or the player that receives, but it doesn't really matter. It's a ball that went through and took out about 4 of their players just because it went direct, straight into the path. A Jota, you know, and that's a feature of play that I can't tell you the last time I've seen a Celtic team that went that direct but didn't go long. You know, there's a lot of folk talking about this is the most enjoyable Celtic team they've seen, and I think there's an argument for saying that because of the way we pass and the way we just, you know, there was a guy that was getting a doing on 4-4 because, you know, it pains me to say it, they're a joy to watch. We play really, really good direct football. You know, we're trying to get the ball forward all the time. And that, I think, was the key thing, that their 3 in midfield aren't good enough to be able to stop that from happening. you know, and they've got a guy that's 36 now. Whatever we think of him, Davis has obviously been a good player on his time, but you can't put a guy like that up against us for any length of time, given the pace that we play the game at and the quality that we've got in our attacking positions. You know, that's always going to cause you difficulty. So as it turned out that it did.
Well, a couple of things about what you're saying there. One, the difference for me between Brendan Rodgers and Ange's passing that you mentioned, Andy, is Brendan Rodgers, we passed to retain possession and then looked for an opportunity. Whereas it just feels to me every pass under Ange has got a purpose. You know, it's a slightly different mindset of don't do anything unless it's got a reason for doing it mentality. And you've got to have a reason behind everything that you do. So it results in much more direct stuff. On your thing there, one of my mates who's a Rangers fan said that what really struck him yesterday was he's been watching so much of other teams playing against Rangers in Scotland where they're trying to slow play down, they're stopping possession and everything's about breaking up play. And then it just was incredible, the speed with which we were playing. He said it was like watching somebody playing PlayStation football with everything on the speed button on it. And it's like we're playing football from the 21st century and the rest of Scottish football, including his own team, are playing football from the early 1990s. That there's this massive gulf. And then the third thing about your Davis, that is the thing that's really struck me about their team. It's the reason why, without blowing my own trumpet, I put on a WhatsApp group that we are in that I thought we would win by at least 3 goals yesterday. Last season, they had a goalkeeper on their bench who was 33, 34. So he's not getting any better at that age. And he wasn't good enough because they had a 39-year-old. The 39-year-old's now gone off because he's 40. And that 33, 34-year-old has now become their first team goalkeeper. So by definition, they've weakened their goalkeeping position. They've got rid of Bassey and not replaced him with somebody better. And Kamara wasn't starting games for them last season and started. Davis wasn't starting games every game last season and started. So for me, I'm looking at their a number of key positions. They've gone backwards.
They've obviously went backwards in terms of, you know, Bassey had a quite impressive final 6 months, and that's why he's going to be playing against them on Wednesday night. But one of the reasons they went backwards is that this is the first time in a number of years where they haven't went ridiculously big in terms of bringing players in. You know, they've not refreshed. You look at that bench that they started with, you know, and I know folk don't want us to dwell too much on them. We'll talk more about ourselves, but see if you look at that bench, there was players on there. You're like, A, who's that? And B, that guy's not going to change the game. You know, Ryan Jack is not going to come on into that midfield and suddenly turn them into an attacking force. Arfield, you know, I need to get myself out of this habit. Whenever I see Arfield coming on, I'm always of the opinion, right, he'll change their style of play and he'll get them goals and things like that. Arfield scored 11 in his first season and has never got higher than 5 ever since that, since he's came to club. You know, so this idea that, you know, maybe nobody else has got it except me, that he's a goal-scoring midfielder, doesn't really do it. So they don't really have that quality in the middle of the park. I never thought Aribo was a particularly good player. I know when we looked at him, the reason we never went for him was because we thought we had a better player than Rogic, and I would argue still that, as it turns out, we did. But he certainly gave them something a bit like that position, you know, that Rogic, Matt O'Reilly, to a lesser extent, Hatate type of attacking, moving the ball forward up the pitch. And I may be wrong because I don't look at him close enough. I don't see where they've got that just now. The guy they've brought in, Tillman, wide right in midfield. I mean, the guys I was talking to at work who, you know, decent guys, and saying, oh, Tillman's done really, really well for us and he's a player that we think might be able to do something. And they know stuff about football. It's not as if they're talking for a position of ignorance. They're not trying to bump players up that perhaps don't have it. But Tillman was really, for them, really disappointing looking yesterday and didn't look like the creative outlet that they think they need. So in terms of where they're at, they have definitely gone backwards, but there's also a sense that they weren't actually great last year. Somehow they got to that Europa final. I still can't understand that, but they played with an intensity at home. But I think the big factor is that team looked scared to play us yesterday. And I don't know whether it's because of our fans or because of intensity. They were on the back foot all the time. And that's the thing that's most annoying about the 10 in a row season was that, see if we'd had fans in there, see the COVID Cup. I don't think that team has got a mentality to be able to stand up to us. The best thing that ever happened to them was COVID, no letting any fans in there. Yeah, but that's the past. But so, you know, we'll move, look to the future. But that's what they've traded on for the past 3 or 4 years, you know. And again, their fans that were in front of us when we started, they just start singing. All their response was to put up their hands as 10, you know, to show that was the most important thing that ever happened. The most important thing that happens to us now is the next league. And the next season, they're still rolling back to the previous 2 seasons ago to try to show that was good. Oh, that's destroyed you and that's affected you. The most important one is the next one. And the one we're in just now is looking particularly good.
So, Andrew, we have we start the game and inside the first minute, Kyogo goes off. Now, I have to say, I'm in the north stand up. It was right in front of me. It just looked, it was all, everything all happened very quickly. So it just looked like they had been quite hard in the very first challenge, or Lundstrom had, to try and impose himself. So, but I've not seen it since. So you have. So,
well, that was the way I saw it. And actually, Lundstrom went in with the deliberate intent of wanting to leave something on a Celtic player. It just happened to be Kyogo, and in some senses, the way in which Lundstrom went in, it was a bit of a freak injury for Kyogo, because I think Lundstrom was actually intent on going through a Celtic player with a tackle, and the ball kind of like half ran away. I can't remember which Celtic player was next to Kyogo. Might have been Greg Taylor, actually. But Lundstrom was determined to put that tackle in, and for me, his whole approach to that incident, for me, that was reckless. He probably had no idea that he was going to injure Kyogo's shoulder, but he definitely went in with intent. And it's I know it's the first minute. Everybody's emotions are high because of the game, but for me, it's that kind of mentality of tackling that, you know, just doesn't have any place in the modern game. And it was clear that he just wanted to put a marker down. And if it hadn't have been Lundstrom, Eddie was talking about Arfield earlier on. Arfield would have probably done the same if he'd started the game. Or Ryan Jack, if he'd started the game. And really, that just summed up their midfield. But it was just a blur to us. Because I think Kyogo has got better and better this season. He's far quicker than last season, if that's possible. And he against Dundee United, he just showed what a phenomenal player he was. So my initial thought was, you know, kind of very disappointed.
Eddie, your thoughts?
I would agree that the purpose was not to try to create an injury on Kyogo's shoulder. I'm not even sure if the purpose was to create an injury specifically on Kyogo. The purpose was just to let people know that they're going to be in a game. And it's hardly surprising that because that's what we're thinking that Lundstrom's there for. He's there to put one on somebody nice and early. It worked at Hampden. Forced Hatate. Remember Hatate looking at Lundstrom during that game, like, what sport are you playing? What are you doing? You know, and he was allowed to do it. And it was a nice early start. This is the way we're going to play. And that's the way that midfield's already said, has lined up. That's their purpose. Their purpose was to try and kick us out of the game. As soon as Kyogo went off and he was getting treated, and then when he came back on again, the way he was holding his arm, he thought, no, he's definitely done. But a significant difference is, I don't think any of us were too disheartened that the substitution had to be made because of the quality we've got on our bench. You know, I mean, we watched on Wednesday night the way, call it the second team if you want, call it the other 11, you know, that absolutely dismantled Ross County and played them off the pitch as well, and played the exact same game, the exact same high tempo. And as things stand just now, it certainly wasn't the sort of sense of trauma that you would expect in a Celtic Rangers game when your main striker goes off after 2 minutes. That, you know, I've been in games before the same way you have, where something like that happens, where they do one of your guys, and it totally upsets the balance of our play and affects us psychologically. That just didn't happen. Would I like to have seen him stay on? Would I thought he'd have done some damage? Absolutely, because he started the season on fire. He's looking terrific. My biggest concern is that he's fit for Tuesday night. But the impact on the team was minimal. Was it a booking? Well, I always think that, see, if you put a foul in so bad that a guy goes off injured, there's a case for saying that it's dangerous and it's reckless play. Whether it's intentional or not isn't really relevant. I thought it potentially should have been a booking right at the start. I don't see Nick Walsh booking somebody. Certainly don't see him booking anybody in a blue jersey quite so early as that. But I think there was a case for saying it, and you know, I think that perhaps that should have happened. But ultimately, did it affect us negatively? No. So it shows the actual strength and depth that we've got.
Yeah. I'll just pick up on what you said about, is it a second team? And I don't think it is a second team. I think we genuinely have got an incredibly deep squad of talent, which is completely interchangeable. Individual players in their positions might play slightly differently, but I think we genuinely can just interchange every single position. And when Wednesday showed that a little bit, as you said, I'm struggling to think of a depth of squad that we've had like this.
No, we were discussing this at the end of the window, and I actually think this is our best squad for that very point, Andy, about interchangeable people going into the front line in particular, but even in midfield. I think the final addition, I mean, obviously we've yet to see him play, but the final addition of the 6'4" Danish defensive midfielder is the final bit as to what you would say might have been lacking from the squad prior to his signature, which is a tall physical guy to play defensive midfield against better teams, particularly European football. So I'm chuffed to bits with the squad at the moment. And actually, in terms of how good that squad was, getting back to the Dundee United game for a minute, going back to the Dundee United game for a second, I did have a bit of sympathy for Dundee United. There's not one of our front three, when we've got Kyogo, Jota and Abada, who we would sell for less than 20 million quid. So that then means, effectively, Dundee United faced a £60 million front three against us. So is it any wonder we scored 9 goals? Is it any wonder we're too good for Scottish football at the moment? So on to the goal. Eddie, what was your thoughts on the goal?
I think that it was, I went back, after the game, I went back and I watched it again, watched the first half, went to ask about it, watched the second half. But at the ground, I didn't think there was anything particularly unusual about it's our throw-in. We take it quick, we move it. Abada's got that ability to find the space in the box. You know, you're thinking he's playing wide, but he's not really playing wide. He suddenly comes in, and I think it's the same on the other wing, that they play as centre forwards when they need to. Although the big thing that I took out was I thought the keeper should have saved it. You know, I don't think it was a particularly hard shot. I think it bounced a couple of times on the deck, and I thought, keeper's going to save that. You know, all these things that go through your head straight away. And it was brilliant when he never. Absolutely brilliant when he never. You know, but, what goal? Your man comes in again from the right wing. Barisic is nowhere near him. It's same old, really, wasn't it?
I've seen that goal. I was searching on Twitter when I came home after the game, and I've seen that goal. Barisic nearly, you can see, contemplated doing that sit-down thing again. He sort of, for a split second, his backside moves downwards, and then he obviously thinks, no, you just get slated.
But back post Barisic strikes again, you know, and it actually put some decent cross in Barisic as the game progressed, you know, so he was probably one of our better players, but it just couldn't cope with him at all. I thought the way we moved it across quick, it was a key thing. I was listening to, like probably everybody else has done, I've been trying to soak up as much post-match feedback about the game as I possibly can. So I listen to Radio Clyde's podcast, and all they were talking about was the, you know, the ball boys are throwing the ball really, really back really quickly, and McCoy's was saying, you know, the ball boys are really doing it. It was almost as if the ball boys were man of the match. Because if you've not been watching Celtic, this is what we do. You know, the second goal, and I know we'll come on to it, the ball boys put the ball down for the corner straight away so they can take it really quick. So all of that all comes together, but that's part of the intensity and the culture that the manager has built. You know, we're starting to become accustomed to that and expect that to be the case. I'm amazed that they weren't wise to it. I'm amazed they're still arguing over a throw-in that clearly wasn't theirs. You know, and pausing and being on the, again, being, I keep saying it, being on the back foot all the time. I would have thought that they'd be more into us and more direct. They came expecting that they were going to get a doing. And funnily enough, that's exactly what they got. I just feel as if the mindset that they approached that game with was, you know, we'll be lucky to get out of here with something. And they played as if they were losing the game before it even started. And it really worked out that way, because we just went and passed that ball right through them.
Well, when I got back to the car, I got in, they were interviewing Van Bronckhorst. And funnily enough, actually, as I was listening to it, I was thinking, there's something odd about this. And then I realised that's the first time I have heard a Rangers manager getting interviewed after a game in about 5-6 years. Would I be right? Is that how long they've had the dispute with the BBC?
So,
and obviously, you know, if Rangers are, you know, if we're not playing Rangers, I'm not particularly paying attention to that much. But yeah, so one, but the other thing was, Van Bronckhorst made the point, we spoke to the players about the intensity that Celtic play the game. We spoke to them about how quickly they take free kicks and throw-ins and corners once they've, you know, when and that, and yet it still seemed to come as a surprise to our players, so they obviously weren't prepared enough. Was his comments. So your point there about he knew about it, but for some reason, the sort of wider Rangers world, and I love the way that it's almost like a conspiracy that our ball boys were getting the ball in quickly. As if we're not, like, a bit like that time, remember shortly after they brought in the principle of holding up a board to see how many minutes of injury time there were, and Bobby Williamson complained because our stadium announcer said there was 4 minutes. Remember, we were playing Kilmarnock, and our stadium announcer said there was 4 minutes to go, and he wasn't happy because it gave our crowd a lift because we were drawing with Kilmarnock and we scored a win in an injury time. And it wasn't fair because our stadium announcer shouldn't be allowed to say that because it gave the crowd a lift. It's the same type of conspiracy theory that's going on just now. So, so Andy, on to the from the first goal.
Well, just to add to the first goal, I think obviously a lot's been made about the speed at which we got across, and Abada doing similar to what he's done against Rangers before. But I actually think that Giakoumakis was really clever, because he actually pulled out wide and he took a Rangers defender with him, and that created the space for Abada. So it actually was, it wasn't all about Barisic not following him in again. It was about Giakoumakis actually doing something that instinctively he wouldn't normally do.
So, second goal, move on from there. Andy, just keep telling us about how fabulous Celtic were. So on to the second goal.
I tell you, I love iconic Celtic things, you know, and you kind of know those moments. And I think, you know, I mean, where I was watching the game yesterday, we just absolutely erupted. It was kind of jaw-dropping stuff. And you cannot get enough of that goal. You cannot get enough of it. It's absolutely breathtaking. And there's a pitch level camera angle, and if you see the stride of Jota to get on the end of that ball before he passes it over McLaughlin, it's absolutely stunning.
Eddie, your thoughts on it? And I'll chuck into the mix that guy who sits next to me, he thought it was better than Larsson's chip of Klos, because Larsson was running in a straight and it was over the top, whereas this was taking the ball down and then going from a tight angle. So, your thoughts on it?
You've just stole something that I was going to say there. And it ties in what Andy was talking about there. See, there are moments when you watch Celtic and you just know that these will be moments that will be replayed for years and years to come. Historic moments. And 9 times out of 10, it's against one form or other of them, right? Because they're a big games. They're the games where if you do it in those games, you're really doing it. You know, and you speak about Larson's chip. We all knew that Larson's chip would be something that would stay with us forever, you know, because it was just so iconic. You know, we can talk about Nakamura's goal in midweek where he just picks it up and it weaves backwards and forwards and he hits it for, you know, it was probably about 25 yards, but we'll say it was 50, 60 yards he hit it from, you know. It's just one of those moments that you remember. You know, again, Nakamura's free kicks against Man United, you know, and you can go further back. You can talk about things in the 90s. You talk about the deflected shot off Terry Hurlock. Things that you instantly, people listening to this right now, because we've got a very select clientele of a certain age, will know exactly what we're talking about. Things that stay with you, you think, I'm never going to forget that. That goal yesterday was one of those moments. For the fact that we took a really quick free kick and the three of them are sort of standing around us, I think it was offside. He was giving it, by the way, if it was, it clearly wasn't in that position. I'd need to go back and look at that again, and I've already looked at it twice, but really quick free kick. O'Reilly just picks that ball up, and O'Reilly's so good at getting his foot round the ball and bringing it under control, and he plays that ball into that space. But Jota's still got a lot to do because he has to stretch out to get it, and he just touches it forward, and he just gets away. And the angle's getting shut down all the time. It's getting tighter and tighter. The keeper comes out. There's not a lot of space, and he just lifts it over him. And even by lifting it over him, it would be so easy for him to have lifted it over him and it would just run parallel to the goal mouth. You know, because to try and get the angle to get into the back of the net from where he is, it's nigh on impossible. But he does it. Somehow he does it. And then he just turns and he runs. And he's such a showman. It's all about show business with him. You know, see, if there's an easy thing to do and there's a thing to do that's going to get the fans up off their seat, Jota will do the thing that gets the fans up off the seat. Because Jota wants to entertain. And so even with his celebrations, you know, the meditation pose that he did, can't even remember who we were playing in that game, you know, when he sits and he does that. But the fist, the iconic fist up in the air, I straight away, maybe it was just coincidence, straight away I thought, that's a Jimmy Johnson pose. You know, head down, fist up in the air. That looked exactly like what was to me, you know. And all of that just all comes together to form something that we're going to replay year after year after year, because it was just one of those great Celtic moments. And there was many, you know, it's not taking out anything away from the rest of the game. The rest of the game was really good. But those wee clips that you're always going to talk about, how he managed to get that ball into the back of the net from that angle, how he managed to catch that ball from O'Reilly's ball through to just touch it further ahead, every single thing about it. And the one other thing that I don't think anybody else has really referenced, I saw one guy talk about it online. Go back and look at it. See when the free kick's taken. You see Van Bronckhorst pointing directly at O'Reilly, pointing at him to tell the rest of his team, there he is, there, you need to go on him. And as soon as the ball goes to him, when nobody goes to him, he just throws his hands up in the air as if, oh, come on, what have I got to do here, guys? It's wonderful. From start to finish, it's an absolutely exquisite goal. And it's one that we'll talk about for years to come.
Your point about the image, he's obviously a very intelligent, very articulate person. I mean, he's a 23-year-old, and in his second language, he's more articulate than many a Scottish footballer that I could mention.
Than many of the people in this conversation right now.
Exactly. And I saw something online, because it was somebody posted up, it was to do with their kid who was cleared with cancer, and somebody posted it up, and they'd gone to that place, one of the places that does Celtic canvas art. They'd gone there, and by coincidence, Jota was there on the same time. So they got a video of Jota saying, this is brilliant to clear the cancer. But for me, it's no coincidence that he, in the last 10 days, has been in a place that specialises in Celtic art work. And he goes and does that pose. I think you're right. I think he saw the Jimmy Johnson one, and he thought, I'm a winger, I'm going to do that pose. It's iconic.
Yeah.
The other thing, I'm going to skip ahead to the fourth goal, just very quickly, on your point about iconic Celtic things. So which is better, David Turnbull's goal or Owen Archdeacon's goal?
I've got to put my hands up and claim a bit of bias. I had a few dealings with with Archdeacon in the 90s in line with my work and stuff like that. And he was always a lovely guy, dead patient when I was taking that football team, and never pointed out just how incompetent I was at it. So I would always go for Archdeacon, because it was just great to see him score that goal. But Turnbull, that was just a thing of beauty as well. That was just so bad. But we'll talk more about that in a minute.
Andy, on the Jota's goal.
I think Eddie's nailed it really, in terms of, you know, we'll just watch that for years to come. The after goal celebration was just magnificent. I think the thing for me is, another winning, but I'm struggling also to think of a happier Celtic team. Every single one of them has got a smile on their face, you know, when we're scoring, and they all seem to be together as a group. And you know, you both know that I'm quite cynical about professional footballers. I think there's a bit of a veneer that they put up to the public. But I think we've got a genuine group of guys who are really, really enjoying what they're doing as professionals. And Jota is just completely bought into the club. So your point, Harry, about the canvas art visit, it's absolutely no surprise, really. I mean, he spent most of the summer wandering around various continents in a Celtic jersey before he'd even signed for us permanently.
The canvas art thing, did you see the canvas art guy has got that image already done?
Yeah.
And it was up. Now, it may well be, they may have posed for it beforehand. I mean, like, sometimes I look at these things that people do and produce and think, is that not just something that's been put through, an image that's been put through Photoshop and has been a couple of filters stuck on it and it's up on an Etsy website or one of these things? But I've watched that guy did the Betty Old, really, really impressive Betty Old painting, and he's still got it pinned to the top of his Twitter account. And it looks like he clearly does those images and he just rattles them out quickly. Mm-hmm. But he's done something pretty spectacular there, that he's managed to get that done in that time scale. But I think it went for about £395 yesterday, and I think perhaps if he'd given it a day or two, he probably would have got more for it. But it's just about, the whole thing is about show. It's about entertainment. It's about making it something that we all want to be part of, and we want to see. This is the type of Celtic team that the mythical Celtic teams that we were brought up to believe in. You know, that idea that we just keep going forward and we keep scoring goals. You know, and when we grew up, the teams we grew up watching when we were particularly young, nobody cared about who the goalkeeper was, because goalkeepers are the guys that aren't good enough to play outfield. You know, and I say that knowing, Harry, exactly what position you play for your school. But that idea that they were the ones that were the last pick, because Celtic were about going forward and attacking. It's you know, Jock Steenbolt, that philosophy, the teams before that, that's what this team is. Whether they're all great pals and whether they're all happy, right now they're happy because they're scoring goals, they're playing in the Champions League, they're playing against Real Madrid. My God, there was a guy playing for MK Dons 8 months ago, he's going to be playing against Real Madrid. If he can't be happy playing for Celtic, nobody can. You know, but it's at the moment, the purpose of the team is to entertain the people in the stand, and by God, they're doing that.
So we are 2-0 up. We've had that fantastic goal. Actually, Rangers had a chance. Was it at 2-0 with a header from Kolak about 2 yards out?
I think it was still 1-0.
Was it still 1-0 at that point?
Yeah, 1-0. There was a wee spell. There was about a 5-10 minute spell where they had a wee bit of possession, didn't manage to do much with it, around about the 25-minute mark, and I thought, oh, they've come in here a wee bit. Not to the extent that you were worried about what they were actually going to do, but certainly they had a wee bit, and then was it around then, or maybe it was at 3-0, where Starfelt tried to head the ball, and Hart was quite far off his line, and their guy hit it first time, but hit it wide, so there was 2 points really at that, but the way that wee spell of possession ended, was the second goal, because we just get free kick and we just went still up the park and scored with it. You know, but yeah, there was a wee bit there where you thought, not enough that it was a wobble, but they started to come into the game and we just shut them down.
So let's just move on to the third goal. So who wants to take us away on that one?
You go on, Eddie.
Okay, so what we've got is, let me think back. So we're coming down the wing, and Greg Taylor, who you've slagged me off for about 2 years for my support of Greg Taylor. Greg Taylor's got the ball. Does he play it to Hatate? Hatate plays, you know, the way that our midfield go wide, they just don't give the opposition on the opposition's right wing, Tavernier and the guy Tillman any time, because Taylor and Hatate are totally dominating and passing the ball. I was going to say triangles, but I've only named two of them, so I'm not quite sure how you can make a triangle out of that. But they're giving Jota options, and Taylor gets the ball and he tries to bring it in, and it comes across, and yet again Abada stepped into the middle of the penalty spot, the penalty box, and he hits a cracker this time, and it goes right through the goalkeeper's legs. And at that point, I'm not saying I'm sympathetic towards the goalkeeper, but you thought, I don't think you're going to get a start again pretty soon. You know, and it's just your luck. It could go through a keeper's legs, it might not, but that was absolutely exquisite. And Greg Taylor was the main provider there, and that shows you just how good a season Greg Taylor's having, and he's turning into a vital part of the team. He's doing exactly what the manager's asking him to do. He's playing the game exactly the way the manager wants him to play it. It's just wonderful to watch. I should say that perhaps it goes for Greg Taylor, and I think it comes off, you know, there's another wee dunt along. It might be O'Reilly, it might be Giakoumakis, because there's a couple of Rangers players are kind of in the box and could have maybe intercepted the cross. But, you know, Abada scores the goal, scores his second. But let's have a wee bit of praise for Taylor, because his contribution, not just to the goal, but across that whole game, was excellent.
Andy,
was that right? Is that what happened?
That's pretty much what happened. I mean, I think, you know, I think we were at that stage of the game where we were kind of pushing towards half time, and they had a couple of chances, and you were just beginning to think, well, let's get to half time without conceding. But then as soon as Abada scored that goal, I mean, my first thought was, well, do you know what, if we come out the same way that we did against Dundee United last week, we could be looking at 5 or 6 here, because you could see, it wasn't just Celtic getting the third goal, but you could see them, they were physically drained by that time. And I think somebody mentioned Tillman earlier on. He got a book in, and he just looked as though he'd chucked it. It all become too much for him. And people talk about you need to have a strong mentality for those games, and it kind of looked as though he and a couple of other of their players they don't have that kind of mental resolve to cope with Celtic playing in that way. So really fantastic for Abada, and it's incredible to think that he's still only 20 and what he's actually doing. His movement and pace are tremendous.
Yeah, so
would you play him as a centre forward? Is he in the right position? You know, obviously he's not going to get a game against Kyogo, but longer term, where do you think his best position is? Do you think he should just be like a poacher in the middle, or do you think he's right to pull him away? Because one of the things I was thinking last season was that he doesn't have a winger's trick, and maybe that's just my own bias in terms of what I think a winger should do. You know, I think a winger should be a Jota, or, you know, just taking guys on and just somehow with a piece of magic suddenly they're beyond them with the ball, and maybe that's an old-fashioned way to look at it. But do you think as he progresses and as he gets older, do you think he'll move more into the middle, or do you think he'll stay out there?
Well, didn't Ange play him through the middle last season when Ange
was still looking for injuries? Remember when the two of them were out injured when a big man had COVID and the wee was out injured? Then I played there a couple of times.
Yeah, so I mean he can play there. My preference is that he plays out wide where he is, because I think his pace. And his intuition, if you like, I think that's what helps us to be able to play that longer passing game, which O'Reilly is clearly exploiting. But the number of balls that are being played over the top to Abada, Jota's getting the ball more into his feet because he can do that trickery. But with Abada, it's all about his pace. So I prefer him where he is at the moment, because he's... his movement and his speed is just really, really good.
I think he's one of these players that is suited to be playing anywhere across a front three. Well, sort of one side or two or three places in a front three. I think as Andy touches on there, I think he's suited to having a different type of guy on the other wing. So I think he's suited to having, or it fits with our system, having Jota on the left, who's much more got more of a trick about him and can do something. And then that frees him up to stay out wide or cut inside. But you're right, Eddie. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he then ended up going through the middle of a team, in a team. So, but as we keep talking about, he's only 20, so he's gonna go very far in the game, I think. So on to half time, and they made a substitution at half time, and straight away when we lined up to take when kickoff was getting lined up, and in the first minute after that, Kent was right, couldn't have been more on the touchline underneath me in the north stand, and the guy right couldn't have been more on the touchline on the right-hand side. And I thought, ah, right, okay, what they're going to try and do here is play a really, really spread out three to try and deal with our inverted fullbacks, who are allowing us to take control of the midfield and try and get our fullbacks to go out wide. Seemed to last about 2 minutes, that system. Eddie, what were your thoughts on it?
Because their hearts weren't in it, you know, and it's... We watched a generation of Celtic players that really, really, really wanted to perform in these games, and wanted to perform against the original Rangers, and they knew that they weren't as good as that team. They knew that ultimately they would just make a mistake somewhere or other, because sometimes you're just up against players that are better than you, and you might be able to win 1 in every 15, 1 in every 20. But you're not going to win the other 14 or the other 19 games that you're up against them. And that team came out thinking, right, it's 3-0 down, the game's gone. Everybody knows the game's gone at this point. The best we can do, if we can get an early goal in the first couple of minutes, then it might put a bit of doubt. And then if we get 75 and maybe get a second, then we've got the last 15 minutes to perhaps get an equaliser. But within the first 5 minutes, you don't get that goal, it's over at that point. You know, so it's just a question of a game management. And at no point did they look as if they had the self-belief or the confidence that they were really going to do that. It's also the fact of the matter is, it was Scott Wright they were bringing on. Now, you know, these guys have played in a European final, and I go back to what I said, I have no idea how that worked for them, but they managed it, right? So you can't take any away for that. But you're not telling me that Scott Wright of Aberdeen would be a player that you would think, oof, they brought him on, he's going to change the game. They've not got the quality. And they never had the quality. They get a win against us under Gerrard to win them a league under extreme circumstances where we're up against it. But other than that, this is the same team that weren't good enough 2 seasons ago, weren't good enough last season, and only good enough this season. You know, and inevitably, our quality as a team and as a unit will always run over the top of them. And you can see it in their faces that they know it. They've got a captain who knows that he's not good enough to beat us. So when they bring these players off the bench, they're sacrificial lambs. If it doesn't work for them, if they don't get a break in the first 5 minutes, they don't think they're good enough. Their mentality isn't there, and we just carry on playing our game. We don't seem to allow ourselves to be affected. Now, Tuesday night might be interesting. There might be the other way around, you know, but I don't think so. I think we'll go out and try. But when they bring him on, it has no impact upon the game. The game was played very calmly. We were very composed. My disappointment was, and I bumped into one of my neighbours when we came out, and he articulated straight away, and he says, I should have been 6 or 7 there. You know, we had them where we wanted them. We should have went and really piled on. And you're greedy at that point, and you want more. But I thought we just played a very contained second half, and we just let them have the ball, and they weren't going anywhere. You know, there was, I think the stats would suggest that Hart made 3 saves from 2 shots on target. Now, the reason he made that third save was because one of them was the header of McGregor towards the end, where he tries to clear it for a free kick, maybe in the last couple of minutes, and Hart saves from McGregor. You know, we were never under any pressure at all at any point. And if we'd wanted to, we could have just turned the heat up a wee bit and went at them and got another one. There's a case for saying, we're 3-0 up, we're playing the most successful club in the world football on Tuesday. All we've got is a second half against a team that claim to be the most successful club in world football for the next 45 minutes. Just get this game finished and out the road. This isn't that important. And maybe that's what they did.
That's what it looked like to me. I thought we played the second half in second gear because we knew we could. They then brought on. Now, I thought this at the game, and I've suddenly, I think, Andy, you've sent the WhatsApp group the tweet from the guy, Andy Bush, from Absolute Radio, making the same point. They brought on this guy who we've seen photos of, and we've thought he's looked overweight. But they brought on Morelos, who looked about 2 stone overweight, and I said, he looks like a former player coming on in a testimonial who's put on a bit of beef. and even when he was going in for challenges, that's what he looked like. How bad is he, Andy?
Well, I'll use him as an illustration to pick up on some of Eddie's comments about their capabilities compared with our squad's capabilities. Because I think the media, as we all know, they have created a false equivalence. And it's been based around the likes of Morelos, Tavernier, who are being heralded as equivalent talent to what we see in the Celtic team for respective positions. So I can't remember how long Morelos has been there now, but for as long as he's been there, going back to Moussa Dembele's time at Celtic, the media, the press have always tried to bum up Morelos as being an equivalent talent to whichever Celtic striker we've had at the time. And it's an absolute nonsense. And Tavernier is the same. I mean, we've got the Croatian right back playing for us. So you can't tell me that there's an equivalence there with Rangers right back. Because
Kent's an example exactly what you're saying, Andy. Sorry to interrupt, but Kent's another one.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say earlier that when Kent and Aribo kind of hit their purple patches, it's not because they're actually really good quality players. It's because they're a little bit unpredictable on the park, and that kind of works for them sometimes. But Kent was truly awful yesterday. He did nothing. But to pick up on Morelos, one thing that I noticed, apart from him being looking completely unfit as a professional footballer, was we are all used to Morelos going in and barging players and leaving something in after a challenge. He didn't even do that yesterday. So they've got a real problem because they've got a player that doesn't actually want to play.
Well, I would maybe argue slightly with that in that... I think there was one point in the second half, and I can't remember exactly when, but did they not leave one on Jens at one point, sort of backed in? Maybe it was accidental, I don't know, because I'm behind it at that point. But I thought he tried to do Jens towards the end, and he went down.
Right.
But I'll put my hands up if that's not the case. Mm. In terms of what we're talking about, anybody listening in on this would 100% expect the three of us to talk about how fat's Morelos, right? Because that's a stock phrase, and that's what we would do anyway, right, regardless. But when they were warming up, because of where my seat was yesterday, you know, they're right in front doing the running drills, right in front of their own support, and he was half-hearted in his efforts. You could see it. He wasn't really interested. But and he was wearing a slightly different tracky outfit for the rest. He looked huge, absolutely huge. You would expect me to say that, and of course I wouldn't let you down and not say that. But even with all of that, I was staggered at the size of him, just the physical dimensions of him. He is not fit looking, and exactly what you're saying, he looks like a player who has been retired for a couple of years and has come back on for a testimonial, you know, and it's brought in, you think, woof, you really needed to do that training every single day to keep that weight off, you know. It looked a mess. And when he came on, absolutely no fear when he came on, because he thought, you're not going to contribute at all. He'd one shot across goal towards the end of the game, which he got himself in a decent position and he hit it wide at the far post. But other than that, I didn't see anything of any significance from him whatsoever. I thought that our guys managed them really, really well, seemed dead comfortable up against them, and were never under any pressure from him when he came on. I was anticipating the Colac guy giving us a bit of a game. I thought, you look at his record since he's came to that club, he's scoring goals, and I thought that if they can play him right, it could be a hard day for Starfelt, and because I'm coming on, up, I still think Starfelt's got mistakes in him, but he was very quiet, and the fact that they took him off, I thought they might even go two up to try and at least salvage something for the 15 fans that were still on the ground. I mean, the only folk that were still there by 3-0 were the boys at the front that are the, I don't know whether it's the Blue Order or the Union Bears, whatever they're calling themselves this week, that wear a lot of black outfits and the shorts and stuff like that, you know, and they were basically just sitting, their faces tripping them, and as for, you know, I always thought that Rangers ultras liked to party all the time, but clearly that wasn't the case anymore. And in fact, the black thing must be dead difficult if you really suffer badly for dandruff, and you know, can I wear something different, you know, you're too busy to start rubbing it off your shoulders to batter somebody, you know, or hold up a red flare because they can't buy blue flares for some reason. But that's me just having a dig at them in passing there. But I thought they would at least try and go for it and play two up front. But no, they didn't do that. They just replaced like for like, and actually they put on an overweight guy that isn't going to move about in the pitch much. And you thought, this is game over. But again, it goes back to there was no depth on their bench at all. There was no quality on their bench at all. And that must be a concern for them. It's great for us, and we'll rub it right into them. But given the amount of games we've got coming up in quick succession in the run-up to this World Cup, it's like midweek games all the time. They get a couple of injuries, they could be in real trouble. Real trouble. You know, they're going to Pittodrie on Saturday. Goodwin's going to play the usual stuff he did with St Mirren, make it very hard to break through, make them very defensive and strong. He's got better players to do it now than he had at St Mirren. Could be interesting where we are this time next Sunday.
Well, yeah, I think it was on Clyde. They were saying that, you know, if Goldson and Colac get injuries, then they really are in a bit of a mess.
Because they don't have another centre half, you know what I mean? Science. Yeah,
they've got no cover. I think the other thing for me as well is, regardless of the personnel, it's entirely up to them and Van Bronckhorst, but their tactics, they're a football. I've watched them a couple of times this season. Their football is awful. It really is awful. And they're just driven by putting in crosses. And to me, that says, well, teams like that don't have much creativity, not much invention, so you just rely on putting crosses in.
The thing that got me as well, towards the end of the game, when, because the game was won and we are sort of just making sure we don't lose, a couple of times they got into our box, and a thing that I really noticed, and actually you sent me, Eddie, that thread from the guy who said, actually, they're very good on follow. I then read some of the other things, and there was a couple of obviously more reasonable Rangers fans who made this comment about me, which is, when they did get in the box, we had four or five players around them, and we just smothered them, and we just took the ball away. Somebody would just step in and take the ball away, that they were completely surrounded. And for me, that's one of the other big things. So again, Ronnie sits next to me. Can be a bit negative in the middle of a game, and he was talking about how we tire in the last, you know, last 20, 30 minutes of a game, we tire. And I was saying, not this season. One, because I think it's a terrible mistake of the rest of Scottish football, allowing us to have five substitutes, because our bench is so good. We are bringing on players who can then go on and win the game, but also we just seem so much fitter, and that demonstrated it to me. They got the result in the cup game because we were knackered in the last 15, 20 minutes and in an extra time last season. This season, they were out on their feet, and when they did get in the box, we just swarmed all around them and then took the ball away. And then going to get on to sort of one other question about the game yesterday. There was a point yesterday towards the end of the game. One, there was Goldson's challenge, which got a booking, which for me should have been a red. Yeah. I thought Lundstrom had five or six bookings in that game. Could have been booked on five or six occasions. Colac twice went for a header. One of them got booked. Twice went for a header where he hit Greg Taylor in the back of the head with his elbow. And then there was one towards the end where Jota basically just took the piss out of their captain, beat him. And so Tavernier just ran back and kicked him and filled him. How did you think? I thought the referee was weak yesterday. The one with the Goldson when he books Giakoumakis as well at the same time. So, I mean, that's an equivalence effectively. Those two people both got a booking for Goldson committing a foul. What was your thoughts, Andy, on the ref?
Yeah, I thought he was pretty weak. Like I say, I mean, like right from that first minute, there was intent from Lundstrom, and you saw the kind of incidents you've outlined. I think the one for me, which I called it at the time, some people disagree, but I think Kent's challenge on Abada in the penalty box, for me, that was a penalty. Because he's prevented Abada from shooting. The fact that Kent is running back and so kind of stops Abada from behind rather than from the side or the front, you know, that doesn't negate the fact that it's a penalty, in my opinion. And I think Walsh just bottled that. I'm pretty certain that if that was in English Premiership or where there's VAR, that would have been given as a penalty.
The two Dutch guys next to me turned and asked at that point, is there VAR? And I'm not putting the accent on. Is there VAR in Scottish football? And I had to explain, no, it's coming in November. And the two of them looked at me like, as if, can you really understand what you're saying, pal? I says, aye, it's not coming in until November. And they were like, what? That would have been a foul.
You should have done your Dutch accent, and then they would have got it.
November. Yeah. That's racist. I'm going to end up being cancelled because of this. Right, edit that bit out. So it's like, I probably will get cancelled for that. That's putting me right off my stride. No, right. So the penalty. Yes, that's what I was talking about. So basically, that'd have been a foul anywhere else in the pitch, surely.
Yeah.
It's not deliberate. It's a coming together. But it's stopping the guy for putting the pass in. That would have been given without a shadow of doubt anywhere else. And I don't think there's anybody listening to this wouldn't be of the opinion it'd have been given as a penalty up the other end. You know, we've seen much weaker incidents than that given as penalties.
Yeah.
I felt as if he gave Lundstrom a free one right at the start. He made mistakes in terms of the elbow. And I've saw the guys, Des Roach and the other guys that do that referee podcast. I've not actually listened to it, so I don't know what they're like, but I know Des through work of old. And so I don't think he's got an agenda in terms other than supporting referees. But talking about, you know, it's in the moment, and because of the Lundstrom elbow into the face of Jota, where he has to get treated, and he's got a cut lip as a consequence of it. That's a red card, maybe a yellow if you want to be generous. So that means that he would have got a second yellow when he goes through Maida, which, because Maida, actually, I was impressed with the way Maida went and actually retained control of the ball and moved forward, because if the one thing last season I wasn't sure about was his touch, but he knew exactly what he was doing. One thing you never mentioned was Tillman standing in front of the free kick.
Yeah.
The ball getting kicked off him. Is that not a yellow card?
Yeah, that was a straight booking.
Yeah, you know, so that's a booking. He gets another booking later on. Now, realistically, would you have got that second booking if he's got the first one? Possibly not. But there's a red card there, if you want to call it. The one thing I don't think was a penalty was Sands' handball. The ball kind of bounces off Sands in the second half and comes up and hits him in the hand. I'm willing to be told that I'm wrong on that, but I thought that the rule there was, you know, it's not a handball if it comes off the player's own body and then hits them in the hand. So I wouldn't have been looking for it there. I just felt that there was an example of inconsistent approaches to the use of yellow cards. There was other players booked for body checks on players that Lundstrom wasn't. I thought that the foul that was given against the centre forward against Giakoumakis against Sands, I thought that was a weak foul to give away because it was just two of them coming together and Sands just wasn't strong enough. He tried to match him and go shoulder to shoulder with him when the big man was coming through and he'd have been through clear on goal if he'd get away from him. I thought that was a sympathetic refereeing decision in the first half. So generally speaking, I didn't think he had a good game. I think he missed a couple of obvious incidents. I think he let them away with things that perhaps he wouldn't have. I think the thing about our big guy is up front is that he's always going to be calling for fouls that he's not going to get, because the same way that Chris Sutton never used to get fouls for defenders backing it, you know, going for him, and they always said he was backing into them. The big man is always sniping at referees about decisions he's not getting. And it's only a matter of time before a ref goes, I'm sick of you here, have a yellow card. And I think that that was probably what happened in the Goldson incident, where he was looking for a red card there, and he must have called him a cheat or something like that, and that's why he got the yellow card. So it was a cheap yellow card to lose, and I think the yellow card count was the same for both teams. But the difference was, the reasons that we got those was because of the decisions that the referee made, rather than really significantly bad tackles. I think McGregor might have got one in the game, but I could be wrong on that. But I think it's maybe worth mentioning that in terms of the way McGregor is managing the games, I think McGregor had a quiet start to the season, the first couple of games, but in the last two or three games, he's really starting to exert his influence again and starting to take control of games. And I thought he played the captain's role brilliantly yesterday. Really inspirational. Dominated them. Did what he did. And just like, wasn't taking any snatch off any of them. It was just, was the boss in that team, and McGregor is a captain has really shown his worth, and games like yesterday showed why it was the right decision. And I thought maybe he was too quiet as a player and too quiet as an individual, but maybe I should have had a bit more respect for, you can take a boy out of Easter House, but you can't take Easter House out of the boy, you know, and he knows how to lead. Really, really good.
Yeah, well, funnily enough, we were chatting about that towards the end of the game yesterday, about McGregor and the kind of the authority that he has on the pitch now that he's captain, and you can clearly see that he's not exactly talking other players through the game, but he's you can see his motivational qualities, and also if you look at the clips really closely on social media, you can see his wind up qualities of the opposition as well.
Yes.
So he's you know, he's been really good, and he comes across as a clever lad. You know, I mean, people talk about intelligent footballers, and he certainly is an intelligent footballer. He's done everything that Ange has asked of him as a captain, which is really good. But to just to go back to Nick Walsh and his refereeing. You wonder what goes on after the game, what kind of process they undertake to evaluate whether they have had a good game, you know, both personally and also there's somebody watching. I presume there's somebody still watching them in the stand and marks their performance, because he was just erratic, and you picked on Giacomakis, and there was one point where he was going through with Sands, and he just clearly shoulder charged him, completely legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Walsh just gave a foul for Sands. Ridiculous.
Was it his first Celtic Rangers game?
Yes.
Yeah. So I thought one of the reasons for his erraticness might be that he was just very, very nervous. I mean, I'm not defending him. I'm just, I got the impression that was a guy being a bit nervous at some of his decision making. It was the one where he, particularly the one where he gave advantage to them, and then we play on. They then lost the ball. Kent was complaining. He continued to wave play on, then stopped, then pulled it back for advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just a nervous guy who couldn't decide whether the right or the wrong thing to do was play advantage or not, and then pull it back, whether it was too late to pull it back or not. I just thought it was just a guy who was a bit all over the place.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the other thing, because it was his first game, I think he was determined to get through that game without giving out a red card, and not necessarily a straight red, but two yellow card offences. And I think that's why Lundstrom got away with things for so long. Because he was reluctant to show cards too early. Because he'll have been told by his peers, don't dish out too many cards in the opening 15, 20 minutes, because you'll have a problem later in the game.
Yeah.
I think that one of the other factors is that some of our own support, when we talk about referee and stuff like that, like, oh, I just enjoy the game, what do you want? You want 4-0? This is exactly the time to point out, because otherwise it just sounds like sour grapes. There was an erratic refereeing performance at best took place yesterday. He didn't get the right decisions at the right times. He made mistakes. He denied us a penalty. He didn't send players off that should have sent off. You know, if because we won 4-1, doesn't he make that all right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we, you know, if folk want to listen and go, oh, what are you moaning about? You've won 4-0, what more do you want? I want consistent refereeing. I want a level playing field. You know, and whether we win 4-0 or we get beat 4-0 is irrelevant to his performance. We won 4-0 despite him. We could have won 5 apparently. Look at it that way. Somebody might have 5-0 on their cootin and he's gubbed it. You've got to feel sympathy for that guy.
Fortunately, I don't think goal difference is going to come into it this season for a start, because I don't think they'll finish close enough to us. But secondly, already, I think we're 17 goals ahead of them already on goal difference. It's going to have to be quite a transformation. We have touched on the Turnbull goal when I mentioned whether it's as good as the Owen Archdeacon one. And if you don't know the Owen Archdeacon one, go and Google it. But you spoke about it, Eddie. So, Andy, just your thoughts on them deciding that the score needed to reflect the performance more and gift us a fourth goal, if you want to just tell us about that one.
Yeah, well, your dog's obviously happy with it. yeah, I mean, I think in some ways the fourth goal was comical, both for us because it was funny, ha-ha, hilarious, but it actually summed them up in terms of them trying to play a style that they are not good enough to play. And it actually, I touched on football intelligence, it actually showed them that they're not that intelligent as footballers to do what they did. And I mean, I don't know what the goalkeeper was thinking, but it was just a ridiculous goal, and you know, Turnbull just couldn't believe his luck, really.
Davis kind of points to that position and the pitch.
Yeah.
He moves away and he moves back as if that's where he wants it played, and and the keeper's thinking, right, I'll play there, but does that thing where they don't, you know, to be fair, Hart probably did something similar in the first half earlier in the game where they don't actually see the opposition player right in front of them. They see their own player beyond them, and sometimes that, you can see that in a game of player where goalkeepers in particular do that. Hart did the same thing with Arfield, but there's another one. Arfield was still in the box when he hit that ball. That's a yellow card.
Yeah, you know, that was it. And actually, you made the point. I was thinking, don't know anybody who drives, very occasionally, if you've ever been in something, you go, oh shit, never noticed him, because you're so busy looking at an incident that's further on the road. You don't see the car that's right in front of you. Somebody, you're turning right into a junction, you see somebody farting around up ahead, and you're so focused on that. And that's what I thought their keeper was. He was so busy, because when you see the camera angle behind the goal, we've got a guy on every Rangers player that's in the general vicinity. So he's got no options. And then, as you say, Andy, I think it was Hull boy who moves into sort of a little bit of space, and he's the only Rangers jersey who's not got a Celtic guy right next to him.
Yeah.
And I think he just doesn't see Turnbull.
But the thing for me is, as well, is, you know, it wasn't just a freak incident, because they'd been doing that in the first half. Goldson was standing there with the ball at a goal kick, just standing there on the 6-yard line. And he simply had no options because of where Celtic players were. So they were trying to do something that they just couldn't do. And I mean, one thing that Joe Hart has learned now is, he's improved on his playing, passing the ball out from the back, but he's also drilled into himself. He knows the dangerous moments when he just has to clear his lines. And their keeper should have done that yesterday.
Another point to make as well, though, is that you know, even though it did look like it was a gift, and it was a gift, Turnbull still has to finish it.
Yeah.
Keeper's rushing him to try and record for that. Turnbull was dead cool, dead composed, and he doesn't always get a lot of credit on this podcast, that, you know, and I'm as guilty of that as anybody, but he took that really, really well, and he deserves a huge amount of credit for just like how easy he made that look. Because many times have we seen something like that happen, and the keeper manages to smother it and shut it down again. You think, how did he no score there? He did exactly what he should have done, and he put a better gloss on the second half, because as you were saying there, Harry, it was more in line with what we would expect for the domination that we had. But remember, in February, where we absolutely destroyed them 3-0 in the first half, And then a narrative emerged subsequently that actually they had the better of the second half.
Yeah.
And you thought, no, never. We totally contained them, yeah, and we had won the game. So they just knocked it about. No, no, it was a fairly even game. If you take the three goals out of it, you know, so would I get the same mince being said to us if we hadn't scored in that half? As we go back in February, we totally destroyed them completely, and that fourth goal just made sure that nobody was in any doubt that, well, there are positive signs here, and, you know, it's closer than you think, and there's no much between the teams, and who was it? Gio has got Ange's measure. That, all that sort of means. That goal was really significant because it avoided any of that nonsense being said.
Well, I'd add to that as well in saying that it was nice to see one of the triple substitutions scoring, and that they all contributed well when they came on, which shows that, you know, the likes of Hatate, you know, can run themselves into the ground for 60 minutes, knowing that an equivalent player is going to come on and run themselves into the ground for the remaining 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Moy's starting to look as if we can see why.
Yeah,
he's considered to be an influential player. He's a player that just passed me by and never really knew anything about it, but he played for Brighton and stuff like that, and that's not going to be something I'm going to pay much attention to anyway. But it took a wee while to sell. He looked as if he was lacking fitness. But last couple of games, he just comes on and he's very calm and composed, and he's just at the right place at the right time. And it also allows McGregor to step further forward and maybe influence the game a wee bit more for a more advanced position. But him coming on is actually, when you've got that game pretty much won, it just makes it all look very, very calm and unflustered. And he looks as though he could be really significant in terms of European football. I don't know how it's going to go with a new guy coming in as a defensive mid, whether we'll use him slightly differently, but I need to put my hands up and say I've been quite impressed with the last couple of games.
Yeah.
So that's the game on Sunday. I'm conscious that this podcast can last about 2 hours at this rate. So,
the final thing to say just before we leave that game was the celebrations at the end of the game. Nobody was going mental as if the league had been won or they'd won the cup or anything like that. You know, and Hart played a part in that, trying to calm people down. And McGregor did the same. You know, yes, celebrate a win, and it was a good win. It was an important win. But it's you know, September. Did you see the interview on BBC Sports Scene with Jota where the guy says, you know, how significant this in the league? And he went, oh, come on. And actually said the words, oh, come on. Which I thought, for a guy whose English isn't his first language, that was spectacular in itself. Saying, you know, it's only September. Let's just calm down. But it was a very important win. But the team have got a focus, and there's good leadership there in Hart, and there's good leadership there in McGregor, making sure everybody stays, right, stay focused. We just need to win again on Saturday. We win again. I saw a guy talking about the players we've brought in and how great it is. And I can remember in the 10 in a row season thinking, what a transfer window we've had. And I'm trying to be cautious and saying, don't want to go too big on what a transfer window we had, because that's all well and good, but the purpose of the league is to win games. You know, the Twitter account that says Rangers have won this championship or that championship, I don't know if anyone saw that, where it's like images, a FIFA image of Rangers holding up, it's obviously a bug, there's no trophy and they're holding up a trophy up. You know, that is, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves, let's enjoy the moment. But if we don't win next week, it's irrelevant. You know, those 3 points get cancelled out. So just keep winning games, just keep getting that consistency and celebrate at the end of the season. And I think we've got a culture at the club, and we've certainly got a manager, and we've got a couple of influential players at the club who understand that. And I thought that was significant as well. While we're all going mental, think the league has won, because we do believe it has won, on the basis of that game, because they're not going to be a bit of match as this season, and I make myself a hostage to fortune by saying that, it's important that the players don't think along those lines.
I think that's absolutely spot on, and I think we've not yet realised that actually this is going to be a bit of a surreal season with the World Cup. You know, so the kind of behind-the-scenes preparations that Ange and the team have got to do to keep the momentum going, you know, it's not going to be like a normal season. Plus, you know, and it's fantastic that we're in the Champions League group stage, but those games are kind of physically and mentally draining.
So I will now get on to, we have a game against a team from Madrid midweek, and UEFA have just released the squad lists for both of those games. So I will take you through the squad list, and then you can tell me all you know about the Real Madrid team and the Real Madrid players. The Real Madrid three goalkeepers are Courtois, Lunin, and Lopez. Then I can't be arsed, actually.
We slipped up on the one thing we know about Courtois was he could have been a Celtic player. And I don't know how widely known this is, but Lennon had a deal to bring him in for Belgium when he was a young player, and we could have got him for about 3 million odd, but Chelsea came in, and I know he went for much more money than that, but that was because the Chelsea inflated Chelsea inflated fees meant that they charged more for him, but we could have got him playing for Celtic. And I'll argue with anybody that isn't true, but that's a fact, because I got it from an impeccable source that he was going to come to Celtic, but Chelsea stepped in. Under Neil Lennon.
Well, I'll go more on to our squad. So we've got our three keepers are Joe Hart, Scott Bain and Sigrist. Our defenders listed on the UEFA website are Greg Taylor, Staffel Jens, Carter Vickers, Bernabe, Hitati, Ralston, Welsh and Juranovic. Midfielders are listed on the UEFA website as Kyogo. The new guy, Saeed. Abada Moy McCarthy is one of our midfielders. Abdelagard, the Danish guy. O'Reilly, the other Danish guy. McGregor, Forrest. No, Idaguchi. And Giamakis Tumbo is listed as a forward. Jota Maeda. So there you go. McCarthy's in our Champions League squad, but Idaguchi isn't. That's about the only thing of note in that. And then we have B-list players. I think all the youth players you can stick in that. So that's our squad. Last time we played Real Madrid, 1980, two tickets per person. So my dad went and stood in a massive long queue and got two tickets. So he took my brother. I didn't get to go. Actually, he didn't end up taking my brother. It was my mum that took it. My dad wasn't well. So actually, my mum and my brother went. So I am getting to see Real Madrid at Celtic Park in a competitive fixture for the first time ever. Either of you two stories of the previous fixture?
No, I mean, I remember it, and even going back at that time, I think Laurie Cunningham was playing for them, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, whichever era of Real Madrid do you face, it's always going to be a tough game.
No recollection of it whatsoever. My memory, as you know, doesn't allow me to remember anything that, you know, games that you attend, I can't remember anything about them. I'm still going to remember who we played yesterday at this point, to be honest with you. But the couple of things about who we're going to be facing going ahead, the things that we do know is very much the Celtic Da podcast of these things. It's normally a young man's game, knowing all about European football, and I've got a Eddie Pearson Jr. who keeps me right on all of that. But Modric is a class act, you know, so he's certainly somebody that we will enjoy watching. Cruz was always worth watching before, and Benzema up front. I mean, I know that's not exactly a scientific analysis and breaking down, you know, other stats and stuff like that, but blimey, they're good players, right? And so that's going to be great to watch them. The defence, somebody will tell me the defence is full of world-class players as well, but I don't really recall off the top of my head any of them. I'll probably listen to a more intellectual podcast and get that information. But I'm just looking forward to seeing them come here and seeing what happens against them. Because as the season is progressing, I can't be the only one whose confidence, and it may make myself a hostage to what's going to look really stupid come 10 o'clock on Tuesday night, is growing to the extent that I think this is the first time, and I don't know how long, maybe since O'Neill's era, where we've been into a Champions League group stage thinking the top tier team or the pot one team, we could give them a game. Who knows? We might be able to get something from it. Am I the only person thinking that, or is that starting to permeate anybody else's thoughts?
No, I'm a bit like that. I'm really looking forward to it because, I mean, I watch a fair bit of football. I don't watch a massive amount of European football, but I can't see many teams playing like Celtic at the moment. I know people talk about the press, and you see a lot of teams who do play a press, but the sheer energy that is in this Celtic team in playing that press is what really interests me. And I'm just really, really looking forward to see if it works against, you know, what obviously is top quality European opposition.
I mean, we talk about the performance in Europe last year, and it wasn't good enough, and this, that, and the other. We get 9 points for the group stage. Do you know, Rangers qualified with 8. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, they went on to have a fantastic run. There's not going to be for that, and Bodo Glimt didn't, you know, was a lesson for us all. But we weren't as bad as was getting made out. I think there was, you know, there are signs there that when we go forward, we attack, we're stronger defensively than we were. We are playing Real Madrid, though, and we can't lose sight of that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not expecting us to beat them 4-0. 3-1, maybe, but not 4-0, right? But I think that there's something in there, what you're saying, that the way we play the game, at the very least, it'll be entertaining.
See, it's funny. I have a certain mindset for lots of things, and I always find that pessimists don't understand this mindset, that I know we are playing Real Madrid, and I know deep down that Real Madrid are a better team than us, right? But I still think Celtic will win 2-0 on Tuesday night. I mean, I know it's the same principle of, I still have it in my head, if it was in a plane that crashed, and if I could just jump out the window 10 feet before it hit the ground, I'd be going up as the plane went down, so I'd be okay. You know, that type of sort of silly mentality. But that's just, you know, that's just, for me, do you know, it wasn't until I went online that I realised that other football fans didn't think like that. I just assumed everybody thought the same way, that you just expect your team to win absolutely every single game, because that's why you support them. I don't think
anything we've discovered during the course of the many, many years that we've been doing this podcast, longest running football fan podcast in the world, is that not many fans think the way you think that. Most things.
Yeah, well, but I just, I why wouldn't you go into this game thinking Celtic will win? Why wouldn't you? I don't get it.
Because it's Real Madrid, you're not Casas.
So?
No, even though I'm agreeing with you and I'm thinking that, your rational brain has got to say to you, we are playing the European champions.
Uh-huh.
We are playing the most successful team in European football.
Mm-hmm.
They're packed full of stars.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
So tell me why we might not win then.
They were European champions at the time, were they not?
Yeah, so we have, the last two European champions we've played haven't won at Celtic Park. Last time we played Real Madrid, they didn't win at Celtic Park. Please give me a convincing reason why I shouldn't go into this game expecting us to win.
I think that's fair enough. I think the other thing for me as well is that we've talked about Celtic going forward, we've talked about the press, but actually we're going into this Champions League season in the group stage with probably as good a defence as we've had in a long time. They don't seem to have many mistakes in them. You know, we've conceded one goal this season, and okay, we're playing domestic opposition, but you know, we're a lot stronger at the back than I think some of the media have kind of given us credit for. So that bodes well. The problem is that if you look at Real Madrid's front three, you know, led by Benzema, and it's Vinicius, isn't it? The young lad I watched him last season when they were getting to the final, and he's absolutely a tremendous player.
Yeah,
that's great as well. Yeah. I mean, they've got no bad players. There's no getting away from that. They've got one or two players that, you know, on their game, on their day, could probably give you a bit of problem.
Mm.
Realistically, these games are a free hit. You know, you're playing a Tier 1 team. As I say, I'm more optimistic about facing a Tier 1 team than I've been in a long time. That doesn't mean to say that I think we'll turn them over. But this game's a free hit. Let's enjoy the moment. Let's go out and try and do something with them. But the games that we think we want to do something is, you know, we really should be taking 6 points for Shakhtar games. Mm-hmm. You know, for all sorts of reasons, in terms of, you know, they might be playing, but they'll play with a lot of heart. But realistically, the circumstances they find themselves in, that would make it very difficult for them, you would think, to compete effectively or the way they would in a normal year. They've also seen Shved. If we're getting worried about playing a team that think that Shved's good enough to play for them, and we never saw anything in that guy, then maybe he'll get a point to prove right enough, but you know, we should be able to beat them. And Leipzig, I think that there's a game to be had there. I think they, did they not get beat 5-0? Just
4-0 yesterday.
4-0 yesterday, Frank, you know,
against and Frankfurt.
The Rangers blew them away at Ibrox. You know, that the intensity of their game, the way they played against them. If we go out and we play that football, there's a game to be won there. So originally I thought, right, we'll take a point of trying to play for third place, but second place isn't beyond our reach to aspire to. Whether we get there or not is another matter. And the other part of that conversation, I suppose, is do we want to go second? Would you rather go third and drop into Europa League this season, or would you rather get to the last 16 and get knocked out at the last 16 of the Champions League?
No, I mean, if I'm being realistic, I mean, obviously, again, this is my point about pessimists. What I found, somebody that we know, pessimists don't understand that sort of thought process of, I am well aware we are playing Real Madrid. I am well aware we are playing the European Championships. I am well aware that their team costs infinitely more than the value of our club in total. But I still have a, you know, thought process that says, yeah, we can win. But I think in the medium to long term of my ambition, that I think we should have a target in the club to play in a European final on or before the 60th anniversary of Lisbon, then for that ambition to happen, we would be better. Getting ahead of ourselves, we could finish fourth in the group, but we would be better finishing third of the group and dropping into Europa League. But we are not. I am not the only ones. I've just literally hot off the press been sent the story from somebody I know in Spain, from AS newspaper in Spain. The headline is, Celtic are a steamroller, bring on Madrid.
There you go.
That's what you want them to be thinking about us. They pick up a paper and go, they absolutely demolished their main rivals. And whether we want it, like it or no, we beat a Champions League team 4-0 yesterday.
A Champions League team who are last year's Europa League finalists.
Yeah, and we're not going to give them any compliments if we can avoid it, but you can't argue with the facts. They go to a European final. How they managed it, I've no idea, but they did it, and they were nowhere near us yesterday. And they'll be playing Champions League football on Tuesday night. That's going to bode well for us. Particularly given the fact that once we watch your team on Tuesday, we can all settle down and enjoy them getting a doing on Wednesday.
Exactly. So, I will then quickly get to predictions for Tuesday night, right? And I don't care. I want what your heart is telling you is going to happen, not your realistic, we'll probably get beat 4-0 thing. What's your heart telling you is going to happen on Tuesday night? Eddie, you can go first.
I think it'll be 2-each. If you're asking me for my heart, I'd like to see us compete. I'd like to see us win 3-2, but at best, I think 2-each.
Andy?
I think we'll win. You know, I've picked up your optimism vibe. I just think the style that we're playing in, I think we'll give all teams, no matter what level, difficulty. If we can retain the ball and play that kind of quick, direct passing through the lines, and I think we'll win 2-0.
You see, I'm not as optimistic as you. I'm going for 2-1 Celtic. So I think they may sneak a goal. I think Jota will deliver in the Champions League. I think people across Europe will be talking about him, and Benfica fans will be saying, "How the hell did we let this guy go?" I think that's going to come. This season's European football, but we'll deal with that later on. Anything else either of you want to say about the night on Tuesday night?
Only that, looking forward to it. Great to have it back. Be really exciting. Lots of folk there. I wonder how the Green Brigade are going to be able to manage to do a tifo that matches what they did yesterday. I thought that was fairly spectacular. I know it might not be everybody's cup of tea, but I thought it was a really powerful thing that they showed.
It got ripped. Did you notice that?
Well, no, I don't think it did. I think it was initially because, again, they were that mob were all sitting watching it with our black t-shirts on as it was starting to come down. and the fact that they could make it where it was probably quite embarrassing for them. And then it was in two parts, and one of the parts came down faster than the other, and then they were, oh, a big cheer. But then actually when the other part started to come down, you could see that that was deliberate, and it all fitted together perfectly. And I thought it was one of these things you see in Europe where you see, how did they manage to put something that spectacular together?
Yeah.
And the artwork is outstanding. And also, I don't know if anybody saw the tweets or the stuff that they've done underneath the concourse there. I'm not sure whether they had the rights to do all of what they've done, but it looks brilliant. And in fact, one of the main things is that the wee man wants to go there early on Tuesday night and get a couple of pictures taken against him of it. It's something to think about in terms of brightening up that the concourse underneath the stands, because it's very, very basic looking. But it was great. It was great. And it'll be interesting to see what they do. But generally speaking, just can't wait for the atmosphere. Can't wait for the occasion. It's great. You hear the music. The roar of the crowd. And it's Real Madrid. The only disappointing thing is, walking up to the game yesterday, was we've still got that big marquee outside, which is, it looks cheap and amateurish. Instead of actually doing something with the main stand to make us really be an established Champions League structured club. You know, we're having to put a cheap extension out the back because we don't have the resources and the facilities inside that stand. I don't know what the answer to that is, but that's the only bit that makes me feel as if we're a bit like the country bumpkin neighbours when we come to these big events, you know.
Yeah,
that's a negative, and I shouldn't really be negative because it's going to be a great night.
Yeah, we've talked offline about that, and they really do need to overhaul the main stand to make sure that they've got the right facilities in that stand for these types of games.
Yeah, I mean, you consider how much what worldwide media attention a Real Madrid game will bring on, to have a tent in the main car park is not professional, but yeah.
But nobody's going to be thinking about that tent when the Champions League music is being played before the game.
No. And the other thing I would say, because Champions League games, and you know, some people unfortunately can't afford a season book and Champions League games on top of that, so you do tend to get more people who they are coming, and as much a bit like your comment, Eddie, earlier about the Germans and the Dutch, people who are they are coming to experience the atmosphere of Celtic Park. If you are doing that, you are the atmosphere. So I have seen last few European games I've been to, I've seen people round about me who think that it's much more exciting to watch it on a 3-inch screen than watch it in real life. Just to let you know, if you put the screen down, there's a 3D event taking place in front of you. Much more fun to watch that. Put the screen away. That would be my point if you're coming for the first time. And you, do you know what? See, if you want to watch some clips of it and get some YouTube hits, just screenshot Sky BT's coverage and then stick it up on your Twitter feed and you can get validated by your hits on that. So watch the game in real life. It's magic. It's brilliant. And we're going to win. So enough on that. I'll say Eddie and Andy, thanks very much.
Heel, guys.
Take care.
Cheers.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Maybe we'll do one after the 2-1 victory over Real Madrid. Anyway, that is me, Harry Brady. That was Hallboy, and that was Eddie Pearson. This is me saying good night and God bless. Good night.
So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.
Next to nothing about Real Madrid.
No, I know nothing. But they're a very famous club who've won lots of European Cups.